Okay, the title of this shiur is "What if the Maharal had a laptop?" Of course, I don't mean to say that I know what the Maharal would have done with the laptop, but I'd like to share with you some of the Maharal's ideas on Jewish education and see whether we think that we might be able to adopt them in our time. Now, you know that the Maharal wrote a commentary on Rashi, on Chumash. And that commentary, he called that commentary Gur Aryeh, the Maharal. And in that commentary, which is, as I said, a commentary on Chumash, on Rashi, on Chumash, there are certain digressions that he takes liberty with and presents to us. So if you look at the sheet, getting more to the smaller letters, the second page, I guess this is, second page, right. You remember the pasuk that says, V'shinantem levonecha v'dibarta ba meshitecha v'veitecha, v'lechtecha v'aderecha v'shochtecha u'v'tumecha. This pasuk is one of the pasukim that is generally quoted as being the pasuk that teaches us about our obligation of Talmud Torah. There is such an obligation. You have to learn Torah, and it's not a you have to remember that Talmud Torah is not a practical matter. Of course, you have to learn about the Jewish or the Torah kitchen, and you have to learn about the Torah family. But even if you don't have a particular issue that you're dealing with halakhically, you have to learn Torah anyway. And the way learning Torah is taught to us, the way the idea kind of is ingrained in us, is v'shinantem livanecha. That somehow parents teaching their children, not just their children knowing about the Torah in some other way, but parents teaching their children is especially important. I think it's good to remember that. But sometimes, people, Shabbos especially, they use the opportunity, a lot of people use the opportunity to learn a little bit of Torah with their children. Now, how do they do it? Let's say grades are kindergarten to 8, K to 8. Usually the child comes home with a sheet. And the sheet tells the parents, well, it may tell them other things also, like who's having a birthday party that week and other things of crucial importance. But it also tells the parents what the child has learned that week. Then suggests to the parents what questions they should ask, because the kids have been prompted to answer those questions. And it always occurred to me that the message that the kid was getting was that Talmud Torah worked from the teacher in school to the parent reading the sheet to the child who's going to answer canned questions. Now, to me, I didn't really recognize this as Talmud Torah, which I always thought was something of a struggle. Like, you want to know something, you want to understand something. And it's not always easy or convenient to understand. But that's what Talmud Torah is. So my suggestion is, since we don't want to breed radicals here in this room, my suggestion is you take the sheet and you do whatever the sheet tells you to do. But if you have the opportunity to study something with your children and grandchildren on Shabbat, pick a pasuk, one pasuk in Parashat HaShavua, and try to learn it together. Believe me, children know the difference between their parents' real concern about things and their parents' accidental concern about things. And we don't want to give our children the idea that we don't really care about Talmud Torah, because we do. And the way to give them that message is to learn a little bit with them. Age is almost no obstacle at all. If you just think of a way to make the presentation, to teach the pasuk, to look at the Rashi, and then to eat the dessert, I think there'll be, you know, a wondrous kind of advantage. And this, what I'm telling you, comes from the pasuk v'shinantem livanecha. Rashi says, if you look on the sheet, Rashi says, Lashon Chidud. Chidud is a word that describes sharpness. Now you could say sharp about a knife, and you could say sharp about a mind. And according to Rashi, the reason that the verb that is chosen is Vishinantam, even though a lot of verbs mean to learn, the reason that it is chosen is because it's Lashon Chidud, its sharpness. Sheyu mechudadim lefanecha. When you go to teach something, you have to know it really well, which is not the same as being able to answer all the questions. Knowing it really well means sharp. It's something that you feel that you're able to teach, which, as I say, doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily be able to answer all the questions. She'im yishalcha adam davar, lo zihei tzarich ligam game lo. When a person asks you, that's what chidud means according to Rashi, when a person asks you a question, you don't have to say, I thought it, I don't know, but you know the answer. Now the answer might be, and the answer might be, I don't know the answer. Both of them are good. But if you don't know the answer because you never heard of the question or never imagined it, then what you're saying is kind of worthless. But if you don't know the answer because you've thought about the answer, you've worked on the answer, but you still haven't achieved that answer, that's Lashon Chidud. If you could say to somebody, hey, that's really a good question, I worked on that myself, I don't know the answer yet, but this fear that we have, that children might ask us a question that we don't know the answer to, is misplaced and misguided. The children, dumb children, like almost anybody could be a child in this context, the children are interested in knowing whether you're thinking about it. They're not interested in hearing a poor answer. They certainly are not interested in hearing that we don't ask those kinds of questions here. Quite the contrary. All the questions are legitimate, and there is a legitimate answer, which is, I don't know. And that answer is a lot better, as Rashi says, than gimgum, than speaking in a kind of an odd way about the question. So this is what Rashi says. Rashi says, you have to know the subject. You have to know the material. So if you have your grandchildren or your children coming, are going to be there for Shabbos, so maybe you should look at the parasha before Shabbos. It's not so difficult. We have every kind of textual advantage today imaginable. You know, from Schottenstein. Is this Schottenstein? This building? No? What? It is? So you know, Schottenstein, besides producing buildings, also produced books, and those books can be very handy. They can be very handy, and even though the Chumash is printed in a kind of close type, which might be annoying, nevertheless, it's all there. It's all there. You can get a Schottenstein Rashi with a Schottenstein Rashi translation and interpretation. You get a Schottenstein Chumash, you get a Schottenstein Gemara. He's like bringing it all to the fore. So we can use it. You don't have to wait for a shiur. You don't have to wait for somebody to tell you. Look at it. And then, if your children, it's like a Pesach, if your children or grandchildren don't ask the questions, at least not yet, Then you could ask the questions and ask them what they think. But this is what Rashi says. So in the commentary of the Maharal on this Rashi, which is what we're going to look at now, it's kind of a long soliloquy by the Maharal. We won't read all of it, but we'll read a good part of it. If you look at we'll start from line 10. First he says something about the Rashi, and then he begins in line 10, Vadarot ha'elu, varatzot elu, hochim nitivot ha'kalkalot. Nitivot ha'kalkalot means crooked paths. When somebody like the Maharal says crooked paths, that's pretty serious. Because we know that the Torah wants us to go on straight paths. And if we're going on crooked paths, we better do something about it. So this is a strong criticism that the Maharal is making. I'm in line 11. Choshvim lalechet lefnei melagia lemakom chefza. They think they're going to get someplace. V'neim shavim achor. And really what they're doing is going backwards. And we don't know yet what the Maharal is talking about, but at this moment I think we should remember that the Maharal lived in the 16th century. And it's always important to remember, even though we're not historians, we don't claim to be historians, and we don't base ourselves on history, but it's important to remember, even for us non-historians, that the 16th century came after the 15th century. I hope that goes all right with all of you. The 16th century came after the 15th century. The 15th century ended with a remarkable event in Jewish history called the expulsion from Spain that took place in 1492. And that the expulsion from Spain was followed by the expulsion from Portugal, which, as I've been told, is a country very near to Spain. So that the Jews went through this trauma. I mean, it has to be a trauma. It doesn't matter how many Jews. There weren't so many. Well, you think the expulsion from Spain, maybe there were like a million Jews, but there were. What? You know how many there were? Not so many. Not so many. Everybody who was killed is Rachmanut, is Mother Litzlan, and everybody who lost their homes, I mean, that's even terrible, but the number of Jews that was expelled from Spain was not so great. And we have to remember one fact. And that one fact will help us to understand everything. That one of the people expelled, he was a child, but he was expelled with those who were expelled from Spain. Was who? Who? Oh yeah. I mean, it's true. It's true, but my one person is different than your one person. But in this case, we can both be right. Right? We can both be right. I'm thinking of the Arizal. I'm thinking about the Arizal, and the Arizal was a child when he left Spain. And eventually he came, as you know, he came to Egypt. He came with his mother to Jerusalem, or with his parents. His father died, and then he went to Egypt, where he studied, and then he went to Tzfat. Those of you who've been to Tzfat know that the Arizal is a prominent personality in Tzfat. He didn't live there very long, but somehow, magically, he had a tremendous influence on the intellectual activity of the Jewish people. What I mean to say by all of this is that the 15th century was kind of explosive, because people came from Spain to all parts of the Jewish world. And with them, they brought new ideas about different things, eventually leading to what we call Kabbalah. What we call Kabbalah. But it's important to remember that Kabbalah pre-existed the Kabbalah. There was Kabbalah before the Kabbalah. It maybe wasn't written up in quite the same way, and it wasn't the books that everybody had, but the Kabbalah was there, and the Maharal had absorbed a tremendous amount of this teaching that we call Kabbalah. And the point that I would like you to focus on is that the Kabbalah was new. It was different. It was interesting. And the Maharal was at the forefront in his time of new and different and interesting. And he was able to think about other things as well in this context. So he's going to tell us that when it comes to Talmud Torah, people are making a grand mistake. They don't know what they're doing. That's what we would say. They don't know what they're doing. He says they went on crooked paths. And crooked paths are what the Torah warns us against. So the Maharal says this. Askir ktsat min advarim. I'm on line 13. Askir ktsat min advarim, which means I'm going to mention a few of them now. Avki ein ze mikomam. Even though I'm writing a commentary on Rashi. I'm not writing a commentary on social history or a commentary on educational methodology. But I can't help myself tomorrow, so I've got to put it in. I'll put it in. Ki katzra ruchi me'achil bir'od le'inayim kilkul darchei ha'Torah. He says, I can't contain myself watching all the people mess up the Torah. Shim yishalu Torah, ain't tshuva b'fiv. He says, look, we have an educational system. We send our children to school for 12 years, right, to like a regular Jewish school. And then we send them to yeshiva in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, which is a great thing to do. And then either they come back or they stay for Shonah Beis or something like that, which is its own concept. You know what Shonah Beis? You know why they didn't have Shonah Beis in Volozhin? Because in Volozhin, they didn't think that there was an end to this Torah business. But today, everybody has an end. Because, you know, there are other things we have to do. Now, after, there are many people who do this, and women who go to seminaries, also known as SEMs, also who have sometimes Shana Shniya. The girls are a little more into Hebrew than the boys. The boys, even if they go to Israeli yeshivas, don't seem to learn too much Hebrew for some reason. I guess it's like determined, you'll be as determined not to learn as you can be to learn. And a lot of people come back from this tremendous, you know, like if you say to your great, great, great grandfathers or grandmothers, we're going to teach you Torah for 12 years, and then we're going to send you to a great yeshiva for 2 years. They would not be able to imagine it. Well, I'd be able to imagine it would be the most wondrous thing that ever happened. And yet we all know that there are kids, not any kids that we're related to, of course, but there are kids who after 12 years of Jewish education come to Israel and can't read a Pasuk straight and can't read Rashi straight because they've been listening for years to things that they don't understand. Because the teachers are afraid to teach the students how to read. They're afraid to say, listen, let's learn how to read, because that's the key to everything. So we have also a kind of a strange educational policy, whereby for us it's enough if you have a couple of kids in the class, male or female, who understand or can repeat what the teacher has just said. And even though they may not be able to analyze the text very well, well, what difference does it make? Now, you have to remember, you know, I was in college. I studied Greek for several years because when people study Greek, absolutely have no idea what they're going to do with themselves in the future. I mean, that's kind of the, you know, the least likely. If you know anything about what you might do in your life, you don't take Greek. I took Greek, so the Greek, at the end of the year, you're supposed to be able to read Greek and translate it and know the word. Like, it was obvious. If you're not going to do that, then don't show up. But we have different ideas. And look what the Maharal says about the crazy ideas of our generation. The Maharal says, I lost the place. What line were we up to? 15? Lo dai lanu ki nimshalnu ke behemot nidmu. We're not like just like ignorant, a bunch of animals. ולא כמעולה שבהמות, בהמות, רק כבני חמורים. We're not, you can't really compare the results to like, okay, we're on the level of baboons. No, we're like a bunch of asses. That's what the Maharal says. ולא כחמורים, רק נהפך ליבנו לאבן דומם. I mean, so he's like continuing in this vein. Ein ach davar ze nosaf. Kerishonim, ashaya ba'erech eleinu, ke'erech galgal al yod, ve'gagarach hardal, hey, halachu tivot yoshe l'hadrich et talmideihem v'nitivot emet. This wasn't always the case, that the educational system produced consistently people who didn't know anything. No, that was not the case in the past. Ad she'agiu el masharaui, v'od, v'dor ha'pachut hazeh, and this generation, which is not even worth mentioning, and the Yuda Azla, we do one thing worse than the next, and things are that's how it remains. So now we skip a little bit to the second column. The Maharal says, in line, to skip a little bit, he says that education is based on progression. First you teach a child what he's capable of learning, and then when he grows, you teach him the next level of his capacity. V'davar ze, line 45, yikabel anar lefi til'o. So he believed that children develop. Imagine that. You ever hear such a thing? That children actually develop? And therefore, he came to several far-reaching conclusions that I think that we should consider. He says, V'adyetchil ha-mishnah, davar shehu lefi erko. He says, the first thing a child should learn is Mishnah. Mishnah has a lot of material in it and a lot of interesting information. And he says, Davar shehu lefi erko kfar etchil yisod habayit nilmedo b'mikra ikrei adinim al derech havana ma. He says, then we'll go to Chumash and we'll teach the child Chumash in a way that he can understand. V'hu lo yisod l'mishnah. And then he will be able to learn the Mishnah more easily. וכאשר קהילה מלאכת הקודש במשנה, שהוא היסוד הגדול ועמוד ברזל לכל התורה, כאשר יקרב למלאכת הקודש והתלמוד, אז יוכל, I'm on line 54, אז יוכל לבנות מגדל ראשו בשמיים, לא ייפול צרור ארצה, והכל על היסוד הקיים הוא המשנה, שהוא לא יסוד מוסד. Now you know that this problem of curriculum is a serious problem. He says, but more serious than the problem of curriculum, and that's how we're going to get to the laptop, more serious than the... What? This is good? More serious than the problem of... more serious than the problem of the laptop is the problem of curriculum. Like, what are you supposed to teach a child? So, you know, everybody today, there's curriculum. You can buy it in the store, you can get it on Amazon, you can get curriculum for anything. You get curriculum for anything, and what is curriculum usually about, as far as I can tell? I'm not a big expert at curriculum. But I think curriculum is about teachers who don't know what they're supposed to teach. It's nothing to do with students. Along comes the Maharal, and he says, listen, there's a problem. The problem is children have to be taught according to the way they develop. And it's not true, as he will say himself, it's not true that the sixth grade has been determined min hashamayim as the time that you should start learning Gemara. Quite the contrary. Why should any sixth grader learn Gemara at all? But even if you have those kind of clever kids in the sixth grade who can repeat whatever the teacher says without necessarily knowing what it is he's talking about. Other kids in the sixth grade can't do that. So why should they try? On the other hand, the Maharal says, we're talking about curriculum, right? This is like a curriculum statement. Maharal says, Mishnah, that's something that a sixth grader can learn. There's a tremendous amount of information in the Mishnah. Tremendous amount. It's friendly. You know the Mishnah? It's written in Hebrew. Hebrew is a language that children have heard about if they go to Jewish schools. And if they learn Mishnah, they get the information. They get the Hebrew, right? They get the language skills. They're able to discern the beginnings of argumentation as it takes place in... So this is a great idea. So in Yerushalayim, I'm sure some of you know this, there was an interesting man whose name was Rabbi Zilberman, Zichrono Livracha. And he came across this Maharal, and he said, why don't we do this? And he went around to different people, and he asked them, well, why don't we do this? And they all said, well, I could teach a little kid Gemara. And what's going to happen with him? The world is going to come to an end. But Rabbi Zilberman, he didn't think that the world was going to come to an end. So he opened up a cheder. You know what a cheder is? You know what a cheder is? A cheder is a place where children are very happy to go. That's what a cheder is. Now it may be because they break things. You know, the children are allowed to break things in the cheder. That's one of the big problems in the cheder is once you've broken all the easy things, it's all like to break the tables and the chairs. But these little kids, they're pretty good. They break them also. The cheder is a happy place usually. Usually. It's a happy place. They scream a lot. And they talk out loud a lot. And they feel good about themselves. The kids who go to the cheder. So Rabbi Zilberman started a cheder. K to 8. And he did not teach any of the children Gemara. He did not. He taught them Halacha, and he taught them Mishnah, and the kids were happy. You know how happy those kids were? The original Zilberman Cheder learns every day of the year, save one. What's that one day? Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av. No, not you. Only Tisha B'Av. Is there a halachic limitation on Torah study? Not on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is just crowded. But you could certainly learn Torah on Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Zilberman started a cheder. They went on Shabbos, they went on Yontif. You imagine that? And they ran to the cheder. They loved it. No, the parents didn't have to force them to go. They loved to go to cheder. Okay, it's true that on Shabbos they didn't go as many hours as they went during the week, but they basically... So he was a big success. He graduated his students in the eighth grade, and then no yeshiva high school would accept them in Yerushalayim. Not a single one. Why? They didn't know Gemara. They didn't know how to accept a kid who doesn't know Gemara. The fact that they were happy and that they'd learned the entire Mishnah, they knew all the Tanakh about Peh, they knew the Chumash and Rashi, and they could explain every single Rashi in the Chumash, that didn't impress anybody. So what do you think the Maharal would have said to those people who were determining what the children should be learning? In fact, in order to fight this, Rabbi Zilberman had to start a high school of his own. And then the kids who wanted to come to his high school from other high schools, he said, well, I can't accept you, because you don't know Mishnah. the Mishnah. And then there was a concordant, as there often is in these kinds of things, where there was a little bit more, both sides were a little bit more liberal. What I'm saying that the influence of the Maharal goes to President. You know that Zilberman Chadorim exists on the entire spectrum of religious education in Eretz Yisrael. Right, there's Haredi Zilberman and Dati Lumi Zilberman, and more off modern Orthodox Zilberman. It's all there. And it's all because the Maharal said, which is what he says in the continuation of his discussion. He said, children don't understand. Children don't understand the Gemara. And so what do the teachers do when children don't understand the Gemara? They teach them Tosfos. You understand? But it's embarrassing for a teacher. I was a teacher once. It's embarrassing for a teacher to teach a kid how to read, to teach him what the pieces of the Gemara are, because he is in the eighth grade. And in the eighth grade, we teach other things. We teach esoterica. We teach things that the kids certainly don't understand, and sometimes even the teachers don't understand what they are teaching. So I think it's important to remember the position of the Maharal when it comes to teaching Gemara. Specifically, he says it out clearly in this work. If you look at the third page, listen to what he says. He said, for example, he was against Parashat HaShavua. What do you think of that? He was against Parashat HaShavua. You know, when I was a kid, they told me that you're not supposed to learn the commentary of the Abarbanel on Shabbos. Because the way the Abarbanel works is he asks a lot of questions, and then he answers his questions one by one. So he says, on Shabbos, though, you eat the cholent, you fall asleep. You're learning the Abarbanel, all you have in your head are the questions. Shabbos after Shabbos, you just have questions to drive you crazy. Don't learn the Abarbanel on Shabbos. The Maharal, listen to the Maharal. Line 80. Achatipshim ba'atzot elu. You know what tipshim are? Not a compliment. Who's he talking about? He's not talking about the goyim. He's talking about the teachers. Line 80. I'm up to line 78. I'm sorry. Line 78. Achatipshim ba'atzot elu darcheihem hefachze. They don't know what they're doing. He's talking about teachers. Melamdim manar mikra ma'at min ha'parasha u'mafsikim. He says, what do they do? Every week they learn a few psukim. Like yesterday's Beshalach, right? So you learn a few psukim. You never get up to the really exciting parts, like Shirat Hayam, because it's already time for next week. U'matchilim b'shavu acheret. Parasha Shniya Kitzat Min HaParasha. So that immediately you feel it's incumbent upon you to start Yitro. Right? Next week is Sunday. Sunday you learn Yitro. Uvichlot HaShana Lo Yada Anar Ki Nishkach Mimeno HaYishonim. At the end of the year, the kid doesn't know anything because he can't figure out how the parashas connect to each other. He can't figure out what's going on. And every time he's learning some odd thing that has nothing to do with what he just learned heretofore. And then the second year comes along. So he says, the second time around, he learns it a little differently. The third time around, he learns it a little differently yet. So he says, there's no continuity, and there's no continuity in terms of the level of investigation. He says, oh, 87. So he says, this is the worst thing that teachers do in our time. What's the worst thing that they do? That they teach Chumash with Rashi. Imagine that. Imagine some religious Jew saying that today. Even a non-religious Jew wouldn't say that. But he said it. He says, "Well, Yesh Lachal Keselam Omedav Peirush Rashi Ala Torah." I'm on line 88. Min Hagzeh Nimshach Mimalam Deiti Nokot Yoshvei Kfarim Shelo haya lehem svarim. He says, why do we all do this crazy thing? What's the crazy thing? Well, we teach Rashi, Chumash Rashi. Why do we all do this crazy thing? He says, because in the little villages, all the teachers had to teach from books that were available. You couldn't just order the books from Central Casting or something. And the only book that they had was a Chumash. That was what the shuls had. Shuls had Chumashim. And so the teachers taught Chumash with Rashi. Says that's the reason. But if they thought about it, they would certainly not have taught Chumash and Rashi. 90. V'inhigu adavar levelot lechalot yimei anar ba'ayin mo'il el anar. So they're all sitting there teaching Rashi. And this has nothing to do with what the needs of the student are. Because one of the needs of the students is to learn the Chumash. But when you learn Chumash with Rashi, it slows you down. Ask somebody who is devoted, who tries to learn the parasha every week. Ask him or her, how many psukim they're actually able to learn without mumbling them? Very few. And he doesn't like that. Just imagine that, this kid, he does know the Chumash, he says he doesn't know the Rashi, so now he's going to learn Gemara, because it's a system in which lack of achievement is held in high esteem. That's the argument of the Maharal. He doesn't understand it. Why should you be so happy? The kid doesn't know the Chumash, so you'll promote him to Gemara. And if he failed Gemara in the 7th grade, why promote him to the 8th grade? Which is not going to be any better for him. Because after all, aren't we interested in Talmud Torah? Isn't that we want, that Rashi said, the Chidud? We want people to be able, to be sharp about what they learn, to know what's going on, to be able to know also what they don't know, which is part of the process of Talmud Torah. V'yeshem atikim oto l'akmara, line 91. V'yeshem atikim oto l'akmara, miyad yitzav tseif anar v'kol dvarim bilvad. Yitzav tseif. You know what yitzav tseif means? It's what birds do. What do birds do? Birds chirp. Yes, that's right. I knew that. But what do birds do? They incessantly say things that are incomprehensible to us. Is that what birds do? I mean, you may think it's cute. What? Oh, you think they know what they're talking about? Well, for the Maharal, they didn't know what they were talking about. For the Maharal, chirping birds are not what we want to be. We want to be people who are sharp about what the Torah teaches us. Utmunat ha-pshat lo yada ve-lahavim. He says, pshat. You know that word, pshat? That's like a big word. It means you know something about it. You can relate to it. That's what pshat is, after all. It's not an it. It's not a thing that I look for and then I snap it down. But pshat is my intelligent response to the material that I'm studying. And my pshat can be different than your pshat or his pshat or her pshat. The important thing is that pshat is an intelligent response to what we are about. He doesn't understand a thing. Below the masik, etc., etc. 106. Of course. And then this child who has successfully been unable to learn Chumash and been unable to learn Rashi, and certainly doesn't know anything about the Gemara that he's being taught, this child, az yasok b'tosafot, mi yitein, v'yalo ha'ikar v'lo yivakesh tosafot. He says, halavai, the child would be happy with what he learned in the Gemara, and he wouldn't need the tosafot. V'od yaleh b'sulam l'drosh b'vasad shav. Yagil Arek Kocho is like not so complimentary about the results. Lasok bepilpul shel hevel. You know, pilpul was its own word, a difficult word for the people who lived at the time of the Maharal. And the meaning, the argument about pilpul was, how confusing can you let the discussion get and still consider yourself to be doing the right thing? That's what pilpul is. Now, pilpul is not something that's easy to objectivize, but for everybody, pilpul is what I don't do. I don't do pilpul. I mean, in other words, every single person would say about himself that he doesn't do pilpul, but he does pshat. Whereas that very person would say about the other guy, you don't do pshat, you do pilpul, right? So in other words, it's like another level. There's another level of Talmud Torah. So Lo comes to Maharal, he says, here we have a kid. Chumash he doesn't know. Rashi he doesn't know. Gemara he doesn't know. Tosfot he doesn't know. But he's doing pilpul. He's doing pilpul. In other words, lack of knowledge has nothing to do with the escalator that brings you to the point of total disillusionment. Because no matter what the teacher will do, no matter how much he rewards the student for his lack of knowledge, eventually, sometimes sooner rather than later, all the students know the truth. How do they know the truth? Well, it's very easy. They get a chavrusa. And they learn in yeshiva, they learn in seminary, not alone, but with somebody else. And you know, it's amazing, when you learn with somebody else, a peer can't fool anybody. It's immediately obvious. If there is knowledge in that chavrusa, there is analysis, the text is bending to the will of the student, or not. Or not. And unfortunately, as I say, we're not careful about that kind of position. I just want to learn a little bit more. If you look at line 114, Lo yisa v'yado me'uma, this student doesn't have a thing. Lo mikra, lo mishnah, lo talmud, lo derech eretz. That's no thing. What's derech eretz? Derech eretz is the way the Torah wants you to go. That's derech eretz. But in order to know about derech eretz, you have to be sensitized by Talmud Torah. You know, derech eretz is not just being a good person, although being a good person is a good thing. Derech eretz means being a good person as the Torah wants you to be a good person. And for that, it's not good enough to hear an aphorism once in a while about good people and bad people. But it's important to learn the material so that you are, that you generate within yourself the proper feelings about how you should act in the world. Halo kol adam shivakish kavod kol nov v'dereish ha-Torah, ra'ui sheyed davel libo ha'otzeh. And he says, really, I don't understand. Everybody who sees what's going on, and I see what's going on, should be saddened by the events of education in our time. Achikim adma v'natena rabim davar ze lo iniach Torah v'chokma v'yir adarokim v'neinu. Hadashim mikerav ba'u. This is like a terrible situation that nobody ever thought of before. You should not think that because you've managed to teach a child or a young person some cleverness about what he is learning, that you've actually taught him anything. Because after all, the standards of Talmud Torah are not. Talmud Torah is not about knowing what to do and what not to do. Even though I agree, knowing what to do and what not to do is a simple thing. I once told the students who came to the yeshiva, I think, or the brewery, I don't remember, the kashrut. I mean, you can teach your roommate in college the laws of kashrut in about 5 minutes. That's if your roommate is not a vegetarian. If your roommate's a vegetarian, it might take 2 minutes to teach the laws of kashrut. But to learn the laws of kashrut, that's a different kind of matter. That's an experience that we would like our children to have. That's an experience that we would like to share with the children. We would like the Torah to become part of their lives, but not only the book that directs where the meat is and where the milk is. That is certainly not sufficient for us. Because after all, kashrut is in the hands of others. The OU, the Kaf K, the OK, I don't want to miss any, and all the others, you know, because I don't want you to think I'm working for anybody. What's kashrut? So you go to that part of the supermarket and you get that kind of stuff, and you keep it separate. Nunu, that does not sound like it's such a mind-blowing enterprise. But I remember that when I learned Yeriday with Rav Soloveitchik Zichrono Livracha, it was a mind-blowing enterprise. It truly was. The devotion and the satisfaction and the way the Rav was energized by the Torah that he learned was something that I cannot forget, and something that I've always taken with me, with the thought. He was even inclusive to my mind. I mean, I know I couldn't do it like he did it, and I know I couldn't do it as well as he could do it, but he gave me the feeling, nevertheless, that it was my responsibility to do it. And so we're doing a kind of criminal thing by not making it possible for our children to experience Talmud Torah as they go along. Now, I think that everything that I've said, everything the Maharal has said, indicates that Talmud Torah is really highly individualized. There should be some way of the teachers being able to focus in on a particular student and his needs. Whereas everybody knows that there are 30 students in the class. I mean, you can't do that. You can't say, okay, 29 students go to sleep, I'm going to talk to Johnny. Even if you could divide up the students into sort of smaller groups, it's like an impossible challenge and a terrible situation for the teachers. I want to make 2 suggestions, which you might think about. One is that you know there's a concept called Beit Midrash. And the Beit Midrash is a place where people sit and learn Torah together, 2 by 2, sometimes by themselves, but most often 2 by 2. So I made this suggestion about 5 years ago to the school system in Israel. A suggestion which no one paid any attention to. But you know how it is. Gadflies keep flying around. So I'm going to make it again. And say it doesn't matter what the students accomplish in terms of curriculum. It matters only that the students love to do what they're doing. Now, how do you learn to love something? You know, you may have wondered, you know, how do you love to learn to love to daven? Can you imagine that? Somebody have a course, let's love davening. I mean, is there anybody who feels that they're in love with the davening that goes on in the shul that they attend? I don't know anybody like that. I mean, I do, for the sake of dramatic sake of things, I'll say I don't know anybody like that. But I do think that there are a lot of people who don't know them. And what are the poor children supposed to do when they see that their parents are not paying attention? They're not really davening. They're not so interested in Parashat Shavuot, the laning. What are the children supposed to figure out? So what they figure out, I think, is okay, my father wants me to keep quiet, so I'll keep quiet, but I get to be big like him. Boy, am I going to talk then. I'm not going to stop talking in shul. He's always been able to tell me not to talk. So that the way you learn to do things, many, many things that we do, even things that are profoundly spiritual, or that we think are profoundly spiritual things, we learn to do them by imitation. Fortunately, it's the person who can look around the shul and say, you see him? He's really davening. I mean, I don't know, but I think he's really davening, and I'd like to be like him. That's a fortunate thing. I remember Rabbi Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, the Yahrzeit Shiur, would talk sometimes about his grandfather and say that it was an experience. Experience means it has an effect. Experience doesn't mean you go to Nepal and see those donkeys or whatever they call that. That's not an experience. An experience is where you are changed. Experiences are cathartic if they're real. And Rabbi Soloveitchik would say, you know what it was for a little kid to stand next to Rav Chaim? The microphone is working on. To stand next to Rav Chaim and daven. He says, that made davening. It was everything. So that Talmud Torah is created for the individual through imitation. If he sees people sitting and learning, and they're really happy about it, they want to do it, he's going to do it also. And it doesn't matter whether he's up to his class or not up to his class. It doesn't matter if he's going to be the next genius of the generation or he's just going to be able to go to a shekul, because he'll be able to integrate Talmud Torah into his lifetime. So what the Maharal is saying to us is, beware of children put into situations that they cannot deal with. Get rid of them. If he was studying physics, there would be no problem. The physics department would get rid of him. Physics department is not going to say, oh, we'll give him another chance. No chances. But Torah is different. Torah, I'm not going to judge my success based on whether he gets to the level of the great scholars of the day. But I want to judge my success by whether or not there's a love for Torah, for the experience, and for the involvement. And that's what I have to generate and grow. We have to understand that the geniuses, of which, of course, the Jewish people have many, geniuses will take care of themselves. You don't have to teach them. Just sit there. I remember once this guy came from Russia. You know Russians, they have a lot of geniuses wandering around. Russians. So he came to the yeshiva. He didn't have ever seen a Gemara in his life. In his life. From Russia. So I said, okay, so we'll learn. And so we learned. We started reading. And he didn't know anything. He didn't know anything. And so I read the Gemara to him. So I said, look, review this part, and we'll go over it later in the day. So he did that, he reviewed, and we sat down again and go over it, and then he read it back to me. I mean, he knew he was in Israel, so he knew Hebrew. So I was listening to him read, and I said, you know, this guy is full of insights that I didn't give him. He just got them on his own. So I took him, he was in the yeshiva, and I put him in a corner at the base manager. So you see this table, this is your table. Come to the base manager and learn by yourself. Don't talk to anybody else, they'll only mess you up. And he did that. And today he's Baki Bishas and Shulchanov, he's a remarkable person, etc., etc. I mean, I think, you know, I would tell you his name, but he would not like me to tell you his name. But this is a fact. On his own, the geniuses do just fine. You don't have to get all the other people to be like the geniuses. Put the geniuses in a corner, let them learn by themselves, let them be just fine. But you have to take the regular people. The people that the Pasuk Vishinantan Levonecha talks about. And teach them. Teach them Torah in a loving manner. And the way that you do that, you don't say, you have to love the Torah. That's probably not going to work. What you have to do is expose it to people who learn Torah and love it. Those people are men and they are women, and we all know that there are people like that. There are people in homes. They should stop teaching in classes and bring those women to the school and have them sit there and learn Torah a couple hours a day. It would be wonderful for the children. So I think that my time is almost up. I don't mean in the living or dead kind of situation, but my time is almost up. I will just say one thing. Several years ago, I started what is called the Web Yeshiva. I had this idea that we could teach Torah on the internet, interactively, and with people working hard just like they work. The main thing is that it's interactive. The students talk to the teachers, the teachers talk to the students. It's a great thing. If you're interested, just look at Google Web Yeshiva. You know Google? Google is not a Jew, but he's done a great thing for the Jewish people, whoever Google might be. It's true that the more you move in the direction of the Beit Midrash system, the more you need tutoring. Smaller and smaller groups. And Jewish education is probably not going to be able to pay for that kind of tutoring. However, the internet will provide a shortcut to shiurim that are appropriate for a particular child, young adult, and opportunities to do tutoring, one-on-one learning on something like Skype, etc., that can be arranged within the context of the school. So the school at first will not be happy about my suggestions, because no one is happy about changing anything. But when the schools realize that the internet can provide them with an inexpensive way of giving quality education to a variety of students' needs, I think they will consider it more seriously. Those of you who have never seen it, try the Web Yeshiva. Take a look. Web Yeshiva, enter. That's it. Have a wonderful day.